Welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Features Interview. Today we have a fabulous guest all across the pond, where they're like us in Canada, still in lockdown. Her film is Gracie. She'll tell you at the end of the show, as always, where to find it. Jane Foster's in the house. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me, Simon.
So I got to start at the beginning. Where did this idea come from? I mean, we know it's a micro-budget film. I could go into that within the first 5 minutes of watching it. So yeah. I want to know where the idea, were you reading something in the paper, or is this somebody happened to somebody you know?
It's a mixture of things. I grew up very much doing a lot of clubbing, and so there were a lot of casualties. There always are in any club, and I really mean, you know, I mean, I know some of the big Radio 1 DJs, and I was very much on that scene. So although I've never done drugs, and I honestly say that I never have, I found that there were an awful lot of stories about people who got lost in those years, you know, from the late 80s to the mid 90s, where they were following DJs around. Perhaps they'd left home, perhaps they'd gone on a journey. And that was somewhere where the idea started, was this disc. And it also relates to a disconnect that I think we have in society with younger people. And that's around still now with millennials. So, yeah. Mm.
So when you started the film, I know you're outside and I'm sure you don't have permits and you're kind of doing some guerrilla filmmaking, which is fine. Yeah. Did you decide this was the street, this was the wall, or just drove by one day and said, that's the place I want to shoot at?
You know, the thing about London is Westminster, which is north of the Thames River, as long as you don't put a camera down, i.e. you don't put it on a tripod, they will let you shoot for nothing. And as long as you are not causing an obstruction on the pavement, I think they accept that the Westminster and all the beautiful buildings that we've got in London are enough of a tourist attraction that they figure, why not spread the word? And so they make it easy for filmmakers. Now, obviously, if you're on a big budget, then they will charge you because you're going to put a camera down and you're going to take up space and you're going to cause an obstruction and you're going to have all sorts of parking cones for your Winnebagoes. But little old me, the idea was, I thought, I can use the backdrop of London to increase the sort of the fantasy value of Gracie, which it does in a very Mary Poppins kind of a way. I can use that for nothing. So that was part of it. I thought, I've got this amazing backdrop and the stories that I write and I tell are very much elastic in a genre sense in any case. So for me, with zero money, it was a huge plus that Westminster let little handheld people like me, and a lot of the stuff on in the exteriors of Gracie is handheld. So yeah. That's basically why. It was a combination of Westminster being very forgiving and also me wanting a fantasy backdrop and thinking, you know what? People love London. Why not? You know? So that's why I did it.
Yeah. How many people are in the crew? I'd say maybe 3 to 4 at most, by most of what I can tell. I mean, you might have a boom mic, but I wasn't even sure you had a boom mic going. That's just something might have been ADR afterwards. And it sounded a little clearer than it should
we
have
did.
Been.
We did. If you shoot on Waterloo Bridge, even at 2 a.m. in the morning, which we were shooting, basically you're setting yourself up for failure in a sound aspect, because every take is different. The traffic is different. The noise is different. So you are setting yourself up for a full sound pass. So, yes, we did boom as a guide, and then we stripped it all out in post and did it. And I always knew that from the start. Yeah, I did. Yeah, we always knew that we would have to completely redo the sound. Yeah, yeah.
I was wondering that. I'm like, this sounds too clear for me to be an outside.
Oh, yeah, it's, so too, it's way too clean. Yeah, for it to be a true guerrilla camera sounds kind of a film. Yeah.
So when you're shooting outside at night, I mean, are you changing your lenses a lot to get the right filter, or you said, nope, this is what I want, and you knew that ahead of time? Because it looks like you might have changed a couple times.
It does change a couple of times, but that was because we couldn't shoot schedule wise when we wanted to. And the second couple of times we shot, we had to use a different camera. So that's the first change. And that comes with, if you're on an extremely low budget with Super 16, which it was shot on, then you are limited as to what you can have lens-wise as well. So some of the lenses are really lovely old anamorphic lenses, and then some of it is shot on primes. So yes, it was a film that had a couple of issues in that side of the production. And that is why there is, some of it has been very well blended in post, but if you're used to watching indie films, as you clearly are, you can see it and you think, oh my goodness gracious me. But you know, that was how, the only way that we could overcome it was to fix it in post and just steam on ahead.
Speaking of steam, I think it's freezing where you are. It looks cold on this shoot. Was it like, you guys look freezing, your main character and both of them, when she gets up in their flags, it looks cold.
We shot in April, which in London can be damn chilly, to be honest. It really can. So yes, we were shooting in April for all of the bridge sequences, and then we went back and shot later in the year. We shot the interiors, which are all at my sister's flat, which at the time was brand new, so it was like an empty apartment, so we just made it into sets. We shot all the interiors, apart from the boat stuff, all of the flashback interiors we shot at my sister's, and then all of the other interiors, they were shot on a boat, actually on the River Thames. It's actually where you see it.
Okay. So, we're going to get there. That'll be my next thing. I want to get back to that, just so you know.
All right.
I just want to continue. Your lead character smokes. Was this always the plan, or does she smoke normally?
No, she doesn't smoke, and it was a plan. It was an idea that it was to show the fact that she's a bit of a rebel, and at the time when a lot of clubbing was going on, it was a sort of a dying rebellious thing. I mean, people, it was the last age of smoking being a cool thing to do. It was the last sting of that before vaping came in, before smoking sort of is not as cool as it once used to be. And when she smokes on the bridge, it's almost as if she's sort of, oh, this is such rubbish. Why am I still doing this? But then also there is a sense that she's still ecological, because she doesn't just throw the litter down on the bridge. So she's still keeping that to herself, and realizing that there is a world around her as the character travels and finds out that there very much is throughout the film.
You have pretty much no talking for the first 8 minutes. It's pretty quiet. Are you trying to sense a sense of loneliness for the viewer?
Yes.
And try to get empathy for your character. I mean, I guess my question I got a two-part question. Are we able to feel, do you think, empathy for her with nothing going on until we find out more about her life? Or do you want us as a viewer to feel that as soon as she starts talking? Sorry.
It's completely fine. I like the fact that it's a mystery.
Okay.
That's what it is. If you read the synopsis or the press, I mean, you know, you can see it happening, but there is still this element of she's on the bridge, and it's the loneliness that I wanted to convey. It's the fact that she feels all so alone in the world. And at its heart, one of the deeper aspects of the film is that it does dialogue with younger people really struggling to connect with the world around them. And it does talk about this, do I want to kill myself and why do I want to kill myself? And a lot of teenagers between 16 to early 20s go through this, and even more so. And now we're in lockdown, even more so, because what's the point of being alive if you can't go out with your mates and have fun, you know? So
I agree.
Yeah.
So let's go back to your location, since you brought them up before I even got to them. Now, your sister was fine with you using her brand new apartment?
Yes, we're still talking.
Well, that's a question, right? You got to ask.
Oh, yeah. She's a sweetie. I mean, that was just timing. She bought this flat and she hadn't really done it up yet, but it happened to be quite modern and it had just very plain walls and it had a really shitty old kitchen. So, you know, 80s sort of kitchen. So we used it as a sort of a rental flat, you know, for Gracie's apartment. Yeah.
And the boat, a beautiful boat.
And that boat. Things,
go ahead.
We called it, we nicknamed it the Gracie boat, funnily enough. And that boat actually came through a friend of a friend who was by no way involved with, but knew what had gone on that boat previously. It had been used as a location for porn shoots before. So there you go. They were used to people with cameras on that boat.
That's funny.
But yeah, I mean, it was people used to live there. I mean, it was pretty low grade living. It wasn't exactly, you know, sort of 5-star accommodation. But again, it's a side of London which is still there. People still do live on boats, and there is a whole sort of community around that. So I felt. A friend of a friend said, look, I know somebody who lives on one of these boats. They'd be happy for you to shoot there. And they were really kind to us. You know, they gave the location for nothing. They just said, look, fine. You know, I don't think they've ever done it since, mind you. But but yeah, it's they were very, very good to us. And it was a stinky old tugboat. You know, what can I say? It used to be... a cargo boat that was turned into bedrooms. And again, it goes with the whole underside of the clubbing world that Gracie inhabits, is this feeling of, you know, you go to this glamorous nightclubby existence in Ibiza or wherever, and then you go back to the fact that you're a 21-year-old and you're stuck in a big city where you can't afford to live anywhere half decent. So, yeah, it's that, yeah.
Now, did you find it easier to shoot on the boat, or was it too claustrophobic for you? It was really tight, because you're probably back to handheld at that point.
It was fairly claustrophobic, and the diesel made everyone car sick. And then when the Thames is very tidal, so it was sitting on the Thames, and the Thames is a very muddy river. And so what happens is the boat, when the tide goes down, you'd be stable and you'd be sitting there, and all of a sudden you'd be shooting, and you suddenly realise that the boat had started to do this again. And the fact that it smelled of diesel, we'd all be going, so yeah, it was not the nicest environment to shoot in that way. No. But
That's funny. I had a question about the lead actress. Did you give her any direction about her hair?
No, it's got a will of its own. Lexi Strauss, her name is, and she is now a very, very fine artist. In actual fact, she was a mate of mine, and she wanted to help me out, and she was an actress and still does act. And I knew that she would put her heart and soul into it. So the mad hair is hers, okay. Hers and hers alone. Yeah.
And where did you find the rest of your cast?
The rest of the cast I got through an organization, which I believe they have in New York. I'm not sure if they have it in Canada, called Shooting People.
No, I haven't heard of it. I haven't.
And it's very much for independent, low budget, some startup, some short film, independent, low budget filmmakers. And it's a resource. You know, you can cast on it. And you can get all the stuff that you need. I mean, I didn't get all of everything I needed for Gracie from Shooting People, but Lexi was, say, she was a mate, and then everybody else was, yeah, I put a notice up on Shooting People and I casted it. So, yeah, you get a lot of start-up new actors. So, yeah.
You're doing an indie film. I would expect you get an upstart indie actors. I mean, you're not going to get it.
No, you're not.
So your film is done. How do you market your indie film? I mean, it's a tiny budget. You probably have no marketing budget. So how do you suggest to get the word out?
Yeah, that is a tricky one. I have a couple of friends who've been very good about pasting it up and putting it wherever they can. And then I have networked a fair bit. I mean, it came out in the UK in 2018, and there were a few interviews that I did through kind resources such as yourself, but also through Mates of Mates. And you just have to build up a word of mouth. The grim truth is the market is completely and utterly swamped in low-budget films. So what one is hoping for is a showcase. That is all. You know, you might be lucky and have a breakthrough film which makes money, but a film like Gracie is a show card, and it shows other people that you are capable of a second film, or even brushing your own teeth on a bad day. You know, that's what it's there for. And I think anybody, it's a shame. And, you know, we can get into a long conversation about the streaming rates that Amazon cuts and cuts and cuts, and various other places do. But the economics are simply brutal with filmmaking. That's all there is to it. So what you're hoping for is a show card, and also a platform to express something that you want to say as a filmmaker. And you hope to go forwards with your career with it. So, yeah. Mm.
So would you prefer your film not to be on Amazon and be more like on a Tubi, or I don't know where else to go?
Well, exactly. The great thing about Amazon is that, okay, there are certain countries where Canada being sadly a classic example where it's a bit tricky and not as many people have it. But it is on USA Amazon, and it has, and I know that because it has created some revenue, pennies compared to what it costs to shoot, but it has done. And it is on UK, and it's on a lot of other territories. And it just depends throughout the world where how strong Amazon has a local presence, has a national presence. So, yes, it has accrued, but it's been a very hit and miss thing. And I can't hope to, with the marketing budget, as you say, it's very hard for me to, you know, I mean, I've, you know, it's in South Africa. But again, it's on Amazon Prime, which how many people in Amazon, you know, in South Africa have Amazon Prime, and how many film websites are there in South Africa that are going to... So again, you come back to this thing, well, why am I making a film that's that low budget to start with? One, because that's where what everybody does when they start, and it's better than making a short, because I think that short films are pretty much devalued these days. They're no indicator that you can make features or that you can make a career out of it. Not really. They are, but, you know, there's lots of arguments for that and debates. But the thing about making a feature, even if it's on a shoestring, is it shows that you can go the distance. And it also, if you work on film, it also shows that you can make a film. And it shows that you can direct. And all of these other things, the production might not stand up, which it doesn't in Gracie's case, because it was in some respects a little bit of a bridge too far. But in other respects, it really does stand up. And that's the point. What I want to do is tell bigger stories with bigger budgets, which is what I'm actually moving towards as we speak.
Oh, look at you go. Good. Big. That's what you wanted. You're getting there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You won't need to come on here anymore. I'll be like, I know that.
Oh, way. I'll come back. You won't get rid of me. I always remember people. I do. I mean, and anyone who's been nice to me, and believe you me, when you make a low budget film, you soon get who the nice people are. You really do. And I know you've had that said to you a lot of times before, but it's true. Yeah.
You do have music in your film, and being low budget, usually you're scrounging for music sometimes. So how did you get a hold of your music?
He approached me, and Tandis was a gold mine, because it's quite an advanced score, as I say, for a budget like that. And he worked for nothing because he'd never done a feature before. And I was advertising for other crew at the time. And he just approached me and he said, look, the storyline really appeals to me. And we just hit it off and we're still really good friends now. His career has done a lot. I have to say he's done a lot better than mine, but that's not unusual. You know, he's doing really, really cool things. And he was one of BAFTA's breakthrough Brits, and he's a very accomplished composer now, but he cut his teeth on Gracie, and he was always really cool about that and still is. Yeah, so yeah, it was very so lucky. Funny.
What an answer. Being an indie filmmaker, how do you find fundraising in England? Is it different than fundraising anywhere else? Are you an Indiegogo person?
Yes, it's a very hit and miss thing, and the idea is that England has a film industry because so many films are shot here. There lies the rub. What we have is a very good tax credit system. So it encourages foreign productions to come here, but that does not necessarily mean that the money then comes back round and goes into development and completes the circle. So we have a very, very tough time, especially if we're not making genre film or TV. You know, if we're making TV, then great. We do have a cool TV industry. And right, I'm talking about 3 years out of date here because the streaming world has changed absolutely everything. And right now I'm aiming for that because that's a good place for me to go. And the pandemic as well has really, really confirmed that. But even up until 2-3 years ago, it was still really hard to make what I call a truly independent movie that wasn't just a zero budget fly by night, which Gracie is, you know. Very, very hard, you know, and it still is because it's a high risk thing. How do you recoup? You're taking a risk on a new person. You're taking a risk that they can deliver. And so for a long time, until distribution settled into the streaming model, which it sort of has now, there was a lot of insecurity. So yeah, it's a big struggle. And I think, I don't know if it's the same in Canada. I think it might be slightly easier. I mean, you've got great tax breaks as well over there for filmmakers. But you're also the proximity to New York. It's, I should imagine it's not quite as hard. But I think it's probably not far off what we've got here. Yeah. I don't know.
At the end of the film, because I do watch the credits, who is Karen? And this film would not have been made without her. Who is Karen?
That would be my sister, who not only donated her flat, but she also gave me some money to finish it. So, yeah.
Okay. So let's pick up from there. So you were out of money and couldn't finish your film at one point?
Absolutely. I've been out of money several times with it. Yeah.
Okay. So you've got a budget, you've shot for a bit, you're out of money. So do you have to ask people? Do you try to refund? Or, I mean, obviously you have a day job. This is not your day job. So how do you pay for your film then?
Basically, because Gracie was on a very, very, very low budget to start with, we had a funder pull out through reasons that weren't to do with the film. They were to do with his portfolio. And he was very sorry to do so, but it was a bit unstable. And he just said, look, I wanted to give you that 20-30K, but I can't. And so this was why Gracie ended up being such a low budget film, because I then thought, you know what, I'm just going to have to get the credit cards out. Because as somebody else once said to me, the time that you're making this film, it was before, you know, Gracie got shelved for a year or two. It came out in 2018, but it was actually made a few years previous to that. And there was a time when Super 16 was so unfashionable, ridiculously so, to the point where it was almost obsolete. Now it's very trendy again, but you know, it, at the time, I was like, okay, fine. I've got a zero budget film that's not a strict genre. And as somebody, you know, I touted the film around and I said, look, I've lost finance. And I went, chatted to some guys at Shepperton Studios, you know, who had a base there. And they said, look, we'd love to, but we can't because of the current climate. But also, he said, what you've got is you're slightly ahead of the curve. You're slightly ahead of your time. And not only that, he said that in any other time, the fact that this is the slightly artier kind of film, you would probably get this finance. But because it's so tight on film rather than capture, digital capture, he said, you've been unlucky. And as you know, the industry, as we call movie making, filmmaking, digital filmmaking, has changed every single year. Something major comes along to change it. So if you are shooting on the low margin that I was, I still don't regret. I still loved shooting on Super 16, and I would shoot on film again any day of the week. I love it. It's great. Having said that, I also love digital, so I'm not at all. It depends on the job and anything else. But the thing is that there is sometimes things that happens that are force majeure, and a small film cannot stand that. It can't stand that kind of pressure, so it caves. So I did have to shelve it for a year or two, and then all of a sudden, Super 16 started coming back into fashion again. And not only that, but to give you an idea, I was quoted £40,000 to scan the rushes to create a digital copy, and that went down to £5,000 two or three years later. So there you go. It's financial. Some of it was financial, some of it was fashion, some of it was just trend. It was a very unusual journey, Gracie's journey, yeah.
So I know the film is finished, obviously. Now, what would you have done if you had to shelve it? Would you have spent the rest of your life going, I need to finish that, or you just left it there?
No. I was always going to finish Gracie, because the way I looked at it is that too many people have put their effort into this. That was the first thing. I thought there's a lot of love that's gone into this project. And also I have a drive to make stories for people. And again, when I was in the real low point with it, and I'm touting it around all the post houses in London, and I spoke to a guy who's since gone on and done bigger things. And he said to me, look, he said, I'm really sorry, we can't help you right now. But he said, hang on in there. He said, you will get there. I said, why? And I was nearly in tears down the phone. And he said, because he said, you're a vocational, you're a film nut. He said, that's all there is to it. He said, you've got this. And I have. I've got that drive for film, which is never, ever going to go. And it does affect some it affects all filmmakers like that, I think. Anybody that goes on the journey that I've gone on with the film, it's going to affect you. Yeah.
So I'm going to have you have a drive for film. When did that start? At 16, 10? Were you making films as a child?
No, I wasn't. I started out life as a makeup artist and a very, very successful hairdresser. I used to do international seminars and travel around, and I've been nominated for awards as a hairdresser. And I woke up around 30, mid-30s, thinking, hang on a minute. And then it reignited. I thought, yeah, it's to do with the visual arts, but there's something missing. And I wrote some poetry for a friend who did a photographic exhibition. That was the link. I knew a lot of photographers because I was in makeup and I was working in film. And I just got drawn into writing the poetry, and it picked up a childhood love of storytelling that I'd always had. When I was a kid at school, I always excelled and absolutely loved stories. And I used to write them and tell them. And when I was very small, obviously, make believe. So what I did was I went back and I picked up and I rediscovered what a real passion was. So in a way, I mean, there is something a little bit autobiographical about Gracie, because I think, like Gracie, I got to a point in my life where I realised I had to change. And it wasn't told out through the medium of drugs and clubbing, although I knew a lot about that. But it was that deep need that Gracie has, is to either get going or die. You know, it's get busy living, or as Andy Dufresne says in The Shawshank Redemption, you've got to get busy living or just die. And that was what it was with me. I thought, no, there's something that's going on creatively here. So it was a mixture of things. So yeah, Gracie was always going to be finished. It's, as I say, it's far from perfect, but it's certainly a lot of love went into it, that's for sure. So yeah.
Okay, so we're rocking. You almost didn't make your film. It got done. You're happy. And you come on the show, and now it's time for fun questions.
Okie dokie.
Because your first time on the show, everybody gets one question the same. Your favorite film?
My favorite film? Top of my head, Blade Runner, it has to be, yeah.
Okay, let's start there.
The first one.
Yes. You're a woman. You're cultured. Do people jaw drop when you tell them Blade Runner? Because they would not expect that.
Listen, I'm an anomaly. I mean, I wrote Gracie as a sort of an urban kind of magi real fantasy, suspense-ish kind of thing. But I actually write sci-fi and fantasy and thrillers. Yeah, I do. I write action thrillers.
So you write novels?
No. I tried writing a novel and I... Let's just say it wasn't well received by me or anyone. I'm a filmmaker. I write to make films. So yeah.
One film you've never seen and should have.
Oh crap. The Island of Dr. Moreau.
Oh, there's two versions of that you got to watch then.
Yeah. I mean, that I haven't got around to yet. And that's always intrigued me. And it's one of those films I must watch that. And I never get around to it. There's plenty more, but that was the first one that pinged into my mind. God only. You know why? It's because I was talking about Marlon Brando the other day. That's why it was in my mind. But yeah, it is on my list, yeah.
One actor working today that you would love to have in a film?
Oh. Has to be Leo DiCaprio. Yeah,
it'd be harder in your eyes, I'm sure.
You couldn't really go wrong, could you? Let's face it. Yeah.
Okay. Before I let you go, please tell everybody where they can find your movie.
Pardon?
And before I let you go, where can they find your movie?
You can find Gracie on Amazon Prime in Canada and US and UK and various other territories.
South Africa.
Yes. South Africa. Yeah, you can. Yeah.
And if they want to find you, do you have anything else to promote? Twitter, Facebook, websites?
My website is the usual, 23-films.com. So www.23-films.com.
Thank you for your time and have a great evening.
Thank you very much for yours, Simon.